ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, and Text 37. So I'll just read the prose verse. It won't be done responsively. Aho asad vanushtitam yad abhiniveshito hum indriyar avidya rachita vis Vishama Vishayanda Kupe Tad Alam Alam Amusha Vanitaya Vinoda Mrigam Mam Digdig Iti Garhyam Chakra. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The king thus began criticizing himself. Alas, how condemned I have become because of my sense gratification. I have now fallen into material enjoyment, which is exactly like a covered well. I have had enough of this. I'm not going to enjoy anymore. Just see how I've become like a dancing monkey in the hands of my wife. Because of this, I am condemned. Purport. How condemned is the advancement of material knowledge can be understood from the behavior of Maharaj Priyavrata. He performed such wonderful acts as creating another sun, which shined during the night, and creating a chariot so great that its wheels formed vast oceans. These activities are so great that modern scientists cannot even imagine how such things can be done. Maharaj Priyavrata acted very wonderfully in the material field of activities, but because he was dealing in sense gratification, ruling his kingdom and dancing to the indications of his beautiful wife, he personally condemned himself. When we think about this example of Maharaj Priyavrata, we can just consider how degraded is the modern civilization of materialistic advancement. Modern so-called scientists and other materialists are very satisfied because they can construct great bridges, roads, and machines. But such activities are nothing comparable to those of Maharaj Priyavrata. If Maharaj Priyavrata could condemn himself in spite of his wonderful activities, how condemned we are in our so-called advancement of material civilization! We can conclude that such advancement has nothing to do with the problems of the living entity entangled within this material world. Unfortunately, modern man does not understand his entanglement and how condemned he is, nor does he know what kind of body he is going to have in the next life. From a spiritual point of view, a great kingdom, a beautiful wife, and wonderful material activities are all impediments to spiritual advancement. Maharaj Priyavrata had served the great sage Narada sincerely. Therefore, even though he had accepted material opulences, he could not be deviated from his own task. He again became Krishna conscious, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Neha bikrama nashosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya triyate mahato bayat, which means, quote, in devotional service there is no loss or diminution, and a small service rendered in devotional life is sufficient to save one from the greatest danger, which is to become a materialist in the next life, to have to take birth again and re-experience all the miseries of material life. Such renunciation as Maharaj Priyavrata's is possible only by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, when people are powerful, or when they have a beautiful wife, a beautiful home, and material popularity, they become more and more entangled. Priyavrata Maharaj, however, having been completely trained by the great sage Narada, revived his Krishna consciousness in spite of all impediments. Again, the translation. The king thus began criticizing himself. Alas, how condemned I have become because of my sense gratification. I have now fallen to material enjoyment, which is exactly like a covered well. I have had enough. I am not going to enjoy any more. Just see how I become like the dancing dog in the hands of my wife. Because of this, I am condemned. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So this is a very telling, very significant passage. It's very significant because for many, many years, King Priyavrata was living the life of a king involved in the various passionate activities of a king, such as ruling the kingdom, you know, administering it, looking to the laws, making sure that people obey the laws, defending the country, or defending his nation, amassing wealth, having a wife. Actually, he had two wives. Having children. All of this is considered material activities. And why would King Priyavrata engage in such activities when prior to his becoming a king, he was totally, completely involved and absorbed in spiritual life under the guidance of the foremost spiritual master, Narad Muni. The story of why he became a king is just as fascinating as his spiritual activities with Narada Muni. It's fascinating because it's like a reversal of what we normally expect. Generally, a person engages in materialistic activities or material life, and at some point he begins to realize that this is a kind of a waste of my time. I've gained certain things from it. I've gained certain virtues. I've gained courage. I've gained strength. I've faced difficulties. I've overcome certain failings that I have. And from that point of view, it actually can be beneficial. But then what? Well, usually what happens is a person renounces his materialistic life, and he begins his next stage, which is the vanaprastha stage, in which he partially renounces his family. And then further on, he takes sannyas, and he goes through four stages of sannyas. And finally, he reaches the Paramahansa stage, in which he sits down and focuses all his attention on his bhajan, or his loving service to Krishna, glorifying him, remembering him, chanting his holy names, worshipping him, totally, fully, 100% absorbed in Krishna conscious activity. So that's a normal. Now, in King Priyavrata's case, it was the opposite. At the beginning of his life, he already knew that materialistic life is of no value, it has no use for him, and the only thing that really has use is to absorb his mind in those things which one normally absorbs his mind in at the end of his life. And so, he was studying under the guidance of Narada Muni, who is giving him direction, giving him teachings, giving him techniques. And he was feeling transcendental bliss, transcendental peace, this transcendental knowledge he had and strength. He had everything, and all he wanted to do was to continue in this manner. There was no reason to stop it because it was all good. It was all uplifting, all strengthening. And then something very strange, something very different came into his life. His father came to him, that was King Manu, and King Manu says, you know, I want to retire now. And you are the most qualified person to run this kingdom, actually the world. You can run it because you have the intelligence and you have the spirituality. You will do it better than anyone, so I want you to come back and become the king of this world. Become the emperor. Well, King Priyavrata says, are you kidding? Me? Go back there? Forget it. That's it. No, no. I'm set. I'm fixed. I'm firm. So he wouldn't come. He could discriminate. So then Manu began to pray, and who came down? Anybody remember? Yes, Lord Brahma came. So higher authority, the head of this material universe, Lord Brahma came and he said, while it is very much appreciated, your love for Krishna, your love for devotional service, your love for maintaining one-pointed attention on the Supreme Lord, this is enviable, this is incomparable, this is wonderful, but that's not what Krishna wants now. He wants something different from you. He wants you to become a king. Well, King Priyavrata was a surrendered soul. And when you surrender to Krishna, and a call comes from higher authority, namely Lord Brahma, who is transmitting Lord Krishna's order, you can't resist it. If you claim to be surrendered, then you have to do what your master tells you to do. Otherwise, you're not a servant. A servant obeys. A servant doesn't tell the master what to do unless the master asks. So King Priyavrata, realizing that this was coming from the Supreme Lord, he surrendered to it. And this is a very important principle of spiritual life. He surrendered to it. And in effect, he gave up to some degree, I say some degree because, and I'll explain, some degree his renounced position or his renunciation. He gave it up to go back to the kingdom and to do all the things that I've already mentioned, namely to be a king, to be a leader, to be one who says, do this, do that, to be one who says, we are now going to attack this particular kingdom because they are the leader there is demoniac. He is misusing his power. He is acting in a way which is injudicious to his subjects. So we will straighten him out. He acted like a regular king. Now, one of the reasons that the Lord wanted him is very similar to the reason that the Lord wanted King Yudhishthira to be king of the world. Namely, that he was a person who was fully developed in Krishna consciousness and in righteousness, in morality, in ethics, in etiquette. He could be a perfect example for the subjects that he would rule. Whatever a great man does, common men follow. How does the rest of it get? Whatever a great man does, common men follow. Whatever. Huh? You remember? A little louder, I can't hear it. Whatever great man performs, common men follow. Whatever. I can't hear it. Anyway, the point is this, I'll say it in my own words. Whatever a great man does, common men follow, and whatever practices he performs, all the world will pursue those practices. This is the main point. And that is how you raise the consciousness of the people in general. You raise it by giving them a perfect example, giving them a role model, someone to emulate. And when they emulate it, what happens is that people treat each other in a proper way, in a fair way, in an understanding way, in a spiritual way. And their lives are organized in such a way that they make spiritual advancement. And this is one of the reasons Krishna wanted Yudhishthira to become the king, because Duryodhana, if he became the king, he was basically a demon. He was evil. He was, you know, very wicked. He was a liar. He was a cheater. He was a manipulator. He was a swindler. He was a person who was not good for his word. He didn't keep his vows. And if the people, the subjects, saw that, remembered that, they would imitate that. And if all the subjects began to act as cheaters, as liars, as swindlers, what kind of a kingdom would you have? You would have a very, very degenerate, depraved kingdom in which nobody could trust anybody. Everyone would be suspicious of everyone, and there would be more murders, you know, more killings, more cheating, hoodwinking, all of this. And in such a kingdom, how can there be any peace? There can't be. And if people don't have peace, then their lives are wasted. A basic prerequisite for developing in spiritual life is to have a peaceful environment. And if you live in a peaceful environment, your mind can be calm enough to begin to consider and think and reflect upon what is the purpose of life? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? Who is God? What is my relationship with God? Sambandhana. Abhideya, Prayojana. Do I have a relationship? How can I erect that or resurrect that relationship? And then when one does resurrect that relationship through various practices, he or she then becomes spiritualized or Krishnaized. And the body then goes to serve the Lord. When the body serves the Lord, then one experiences transcendental bliss. As Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, you will come to me without a doubt. Whoever at the end of his life quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. So the goal of life, as King Priyavrata knew, was to go back home, back to Godhead. And he knew that the way to do that was not by focusing, not by centering, not by absorbing his mind in materialistic activities in which one becomes so entangled that he cannot withdraw from it. Entangled in the sense that it becomes attached to it. What is attachment? Attachment is the feeling that I can't live without this person, this place, or this thing. People get attached to a place, although they may have the worst weather in the world, heavy snows, or blistering heat. But because they were born there, their body is connected with that place. Even though there are many opportunities to go different places, they stay in that one place because it is my homeland, the land of my birth. And the land of my birth is the land of my love. Even though it's badgering them, battering them, destroying them in every way. So people become attached to their places. They become attached to their names. They become attached to the persons around them. Attachment is the feeling, I can't live without these persons. Without these persons, I'm dead. And sometimes when somebody, like a wife, brother, sister, father, dies or disappears, the persons who are connected with them feel like their heart has been yanked out of their chest. And that's because they are attached in the sense that I cannot live without them. They are my life, my breath, my air, my all. And this is wrong, because the only one whom we cannot live without is Krishna. And when we live without thinking of Him, remembering Him, worshipping Him, praising Him, glorifying Him, surrendering to Him, reciting prayers to Him, focusing our entire attention on Him. When we don't do that, we are virtually dead. A person who is alive because Krishna is living in his or her heart, is thinking through his heart, is guiding him through the heart, and is directing his wanderings here and there to enable him to improve his life. Nothing we do is accidental, as many people tend to think. Everything that a devotee does is being guided and directed and focused by Krishna as a result of his grace. No one more than anyone than Krishna wants us to advance, wants us to improve in our spiritual life. And he will give us exactly what we need in order to do this. So now we come back to King Priyavrata. So King Priyavrata, although he was involved in various kinds of sense pleasure, he was enjoying his wives, he was enjoying the kingdom, enjoying the sacrifices, enjoying his children. But he still, because he was a great devotee, he still maintained by Krishna's grace a deep reserve within his heart of detachment, of dispassion, of discrimination, of devotion. Although these were not fully manifest, they were manifest to some degree. He was remembering Krishna, but nowhere near as fully, as concentratedly or attentively as he would like to. It's only natural that when you get involved in worldly activities, it's like if you take a cloth and you put it in some red dye, well then you pull the white cloth up, it's no longer white, it's red, it gets tainted, it gets colored. So you put it in the black dye, it gets covered. You put it in the orange dye, it gets colored. So when we engage in various kinds of worldly activities, even though we may have a reserve of spirituality, we may realize that this is not my real life. Even though we know that still, because various activities are in the mode of passion, they are in the mode of ignorance, and they are in the mode of goodness. So especially warrior activities are in the mode of passion primarily. They are active, they are doing things, they are constructing things, they are building things, they are destroying things. They are very, very active. So it's natural that one becomes tainted. Now King Priyavrata at this juncture in his life can't take it any longer. His kids are grown up. He has grown-up sons. His daughters have been married. He realizes that his son can just as well run this kingdom as well as he. His son has been taught the very spiritual teachings that he himself learned under Narad Muni. They're all very qualified. And so he came to the realization that, what am I hanging around here for? What's the point? There's better things to do than this. So what he decided to do is install his son on the throne and to restart, if you will, his spiritual life. In other words, he wanted to continue where he left off when he left Narad Muni, because he knew that would give him true happiness. Whatever happiness he had from the world was temporary. It was momentary. It was here today and gone tomorrow. But he wanted continuous, unbroken happiness, not temporary type. He wanted the kind of happiness that enables a person to feel closer and closer to the Supreme Lord. The more we think of Krishna, the more we absorb ourselves in Krishna, the more we recite prayers to Krishna, the more we put our whole heart in Krishna conscious activities, the result is that we grow closer to Krishna, we associate with Him, because as we know, Krishna is non-different than His name, His qualities, His form, His pastimes. When we associate with them in our imagination and in the readings of the scriptures, then we begin to absorb His wonderful qualities. And in absorbing His wonderful qualities, we also absorb the state of His consciousness, namely pure bliss, pure peace, pure strength, pure knowledge, pure freedom. This is what everyone wants but cannot find because they are searching outside their own bodies for it. And as long as we search outside, we may get the imitation of peace or joy or strength or freedom. For example, India got independence and had freedom from the British. But still, there are miseries from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest. All are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. And King Priyavrata felt, and this is a very important point, he felt that he was wasting his life. When a devotee becomes more advanced, every second becomes precious. It becomes meaningful. It becomes so valuable that he doesn't want to waste even a single moment. And he felt he was wasting his time in one sense. And in another sense, he wasn't because he was doing the will of God. But now that that will had been fulfilled, and he had grown up sons, he no longer had to do what the Lord wanted him to do. He could now renounce his throne and pursue his spiritual life, which is what he was looking forward to. It. And because he was so, in one sense, to some degree separated, because he was doing service to the Lord, yes, his running the kingdom was service to Krishna. But it was not what we call one-pointed focused service, where your mind is, for example, you're chanting the holy Hare Krishna mantra, your mind is on the mantra, your mind is on Krishna. So when he was doing his warrior work, his mind was on doing the activities that warriors perform, whether it's killing, whether it's practicing, whether it's amassing new kingdoms, whether it's making proclamations, laws, whatever it is, your mind is on that. Although in the back of your mind you realize, yes, I'm doing this for Krishna. But it's not one-pointed, focused attention on the Lord. And that's what he wanted. That's why when you take full renunciation, you focus your attention totally and wholly on Krishna. You read, for example, Krishna book completely. That's all you want to do. Or you read the Bhagavatam. That's all you want to do. You perform prayers. That's all you want to do. Because when we do those, they bring with them tremendous feelings of inner happiness. A happiness which passes all understanding. A happiness which exists within the heart. And which stays with us. It doesn't end when we stop the prayers. It continues like a bubbling spring underground. And so that's what King Priyavrata was doing. He was condemning himself. He knew that he had become a little attached, because that's natural when you associate with material energy. Even though he was very spiritual, he was a little bit attached. Not much, because he had a great reserve of spirituality. So he could easily realize, what a fool I am, just the way he says, I'm condemned. I'm getting out of this. I'm leaving. I've done my job. I've done service to Krishna. I've obeyed him. Now I go to Krishna in a focused, one-pointed, centered way. I go back to my spiritual activities, and that's all I do, just that. So we all have a wonderful opportunity here, because many of us are just living and serving Krishna and nothing else. So when we do that, we are very blessed. And we should cherish our service as being extremely beneficial. We should thank Krishna as often as possible for the great opportunity he has given us to grow closer to him, to always be at his lotus feet. Because people in general, even those who are spiritually inclined, their minds are so scattered in so many different activities. But here we have that wonderful opportunity to look at the deities, to sing songs in glorification of the great spiritual master Srila Prabhupada and his and those who came before him. We have the opportunity to associate with devotees, to live in a holy dham. We have this opportunity to connect with the Supreme Lord and make advancement, which take people millions of years. So we are highly blessed. Truly have we become blessed. And we need to be thankful. We should never take it for granted, because I have seen so many persons who do take it for granted, who take it lightly, who take it casually, and don't cherish it as more precious than the most precious diamond in the world. If it's not taken in that spirit, Krishna can sometimes take us away, can remove us from it. And we experience the miseries of material life, which then we begin to realize, what did I give up? How wonderful spiritual life was. And look at me now, I'm working in this dead-end job. Or I don't have a job. Or I'm living out on the street like so many people are today. There's so many tent cities coming up due to this big recession which is on now. Millions of people, over 10 million people are out of work. And many are up in these big lots where they put up a tent, and then they go to a particular place and get handouts, just like the Depression in 1929, 30, 31. So we are very fortunate. We come and we go to the prasadam room, and there's more, you have more to eat than you can even have for 5 days just in one meal. There's so much there. This is Krishna's mercy. This is His love. So we should take it seriously. We should treasure it. We should feel that we are truly blessed. We should be thankful every moment, and we should try to share this mercy with as many persons as we can, to whatever degree we have of Krishna consciousness. If we can share it, this is very pleasing to Krishna, pleasing to the previous acharyas, and it will redeem and uplift those who are in ignorance and suffering, and it will further advance us in the cause of Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any comments that anyone would like to make, please? Anyone? Any contradictions or any arguments? No arguments? You have one, of course, I knew.
Srila Prabhupada, he said on the end of his life, then half of his job is not finished. That means, you know, the second one was Varnashrama Dharma. He wanted to establish Varnashrama Dharma in a society. And my question is, maybe give to us to do that. That in order to do that, is it then we should try to very strictly follow a system, you know, like first Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. You know, I think I read in Prabhupada books exists some kshetra sannyas, that grihastha, they can go together, they can live in a holy dham on the rest of their life. This is one kind of sannyas. Another one is they just, you know, mankind takes vanaprast and after sannyas. Is it then we should try to do that in our society?
I don't know what your question is, though, Prabhupada.
My question is, is it then in our society, for example, grihastha ashram, should they try to follow a system, then when they come to the age of 50 or whatever, 55, they should take vanaprast and sannyas, or there is another possibility to go to the holy dham and live like kshetra sannyas?
Okay, let me I think I understand your question as best as I can, Prabhuji.
No, my question is, you know, we are pioneers, and, you know, still, you know, many grihastha are young, but my question is, should they live together on the rest of their life together, or they should take vanaprast sannyas?
Your question is if
should they do that or not, or they should live together?
Well, first of all, we're not living in vanashram now. That's number one. Number two, you cannot have vanashram until you have a colony of Brahmins, because somebody has to manage it. Somebody has to, I shouldn't say manage it, but somebody has to give guidance to those who become kshatriyas, who manage the actual vanashram dharma. So, Srila Prabhupada's desire was that first a community of Brahmins should be developed. Even those who had Shudra tendencies, it doesn't matter. If you become a devotee, you're higher than a Brahmin. A devotee means one who just thinks only of serving God, loving God, and pleasing God. And that's all he does. Whether he's a cook, whether he's a sweeper, whether he cleans the toilets, whether he's an office worker, whether he's a book distributor, if he's always thinking of God, then he's devotee, and devotee is even higher than Brahman. So that was Srila Prabhupada's ideal. That was the... Now, normally in the Varnashram system, a person, when he reaches 50 years, he's supposed to take vanaprast. Okay, vanaprast is a withdrawal from family life to some extent, not fully, of course. He begins to live a little bit away from his family, then he comes back and he lives with them, so forth. First of all, this is something you cannot legislate. You cannot give an edict. Okay, at 50 you take sannyas, because people are in different degrees or different levels of God consciousness. Now, if a person feels uncomfortable living away from his wife, and then maybe that would not be the best thing for him. Maybe the best thing, maybe he gets good. Many men feel great inspiration from their wives. It's mentioned in one of the purports that especially kshatriyas and grihasthas, they must have a wife, and they generally are inspired by their wives to do well in their service. And there are many men I know who can't really persevere as strenuously and as inspirationally as they can when they're married. Women have that effect upon them. And that's not to be looked down upon at all, because that's just the way it is at that point. And they grow in spiritual life because they perform their prescribed duties and they do them well and they learn to do them for Krishna. Now, if his wife is very advanced soul and he's very advanced soul and they're both centering their life on Krishna consciousness, they're both devotees, what is the need for sannyas? Where's the necessity for it? If they're both completely absorbed, they're not attached to each other from the physical point of view, they're no longer interested in or even having sexual activity, they're no longer concerned about how beautiful or how handsome they look, they're just concerned about pleasing Krishna. That's sannyas. Prabhupada used to call that grahastha sannyas. So for those persons, but everyone is not like that. Sometimes men become attached to their wives, or wives become attached, and they remain materialistic. For those persons who remain materialistic and are stuck on that kind of activity, for them it is best that they learn to renounce, because they're not going to make very much progress if they're still, when they're 60 years old, engaged in sexual activities. And if they can't withdraw from those activities because the man sees the beauty of his wife and he can't stop hungering for that, or the woman sees the handsomeness of her husband and she can't stop longing for that, if they can't do that, then they need to, like taking a diseased tooth, you have to pull it out. Is it not? You have to take it out because it's not only diseasing your mouth, but your whole body becomes diseased. So it depends upon the particular persons. We have some people in our community, they're husband and wife, they're in their 80s. We have our own Virbahu Prabhu and his wife. They're not, but they're both totally absorbed in their loving service to Krishna. I would be the last person to tell them. If they're inspiring each other to perform loving devotional service to Krishna, then I would say, yes, continue on. Why change it? And if you left one another and your service went down, I would say, this is a bad decision. So it depends upon the individual, really. And since we don't have a Varnashram system, per se, and what Lord Chaitanya advised, because people are very contaminated in this age, the best thing is to focus upon the Sankirtan, Harinam, book distribution, prayer, and in that way grow in Krishna consciousness. Does that answer your question, Prabhu?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Is there any other question that I have? So some of you who may get married, I've just reassured you that you may be able to stay married for maybe till you're 90 years old if both of you are pure devotees. Sometimes women get a little bit scared. My husband's going to leave me. But it's not necessary. If, of course, your senses become purified. And when your senses are purified and you're not looking for sense gratification anymore, it's wonderful to have a friend who's in Krishna consciousness. And if that's the way it goes, then fine. What could be better than a loving friend that you have right on to the end? For example, King Pandu, his wives were very attached to him. When he decided to renounce the world, because it was a curse on him that if he had sex with any of his wives, then what would happen? He would die, and he decided to renounce his kingdom. His wives, because they were attached to him, not just because he was handsome and broad-shouldered and sturdy, but because he was so spiritual. He was called a king of kings because he was so filled with virtue. So they wanted to be with him. They wanted to serve him. And they wanted to do what he did. If he lay on the ground in austerity, they wanted to lie on the ground. If he suffered, they wanted to suffer. And when he actually did die because of getting stimulated and having falling down due to the springtime and all that, they wanted to leave with him. They wanted to go back to the heavenly planets with him, or wherever he was going, to the spiritual world. So one of them did go. So it was a spiritual relationship, though. There was nothing sensual. For 12 years, they lived complete like brahmacharis. And they wore, the women, they wore like what you call like bark clothing. You ever see the bark? It's very loose. It twines around a tree. It looks like cloth. It doesn't make your figure look very prepossessing. You look like you're just a bag. And that's what it is, just straight. And so the king, he was able to practice all his austerities. So the important point is that we learn mainly to become attached to Krishna. And if we become attached to Krishna, we fulfill the goal of life. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Vijaya.